The world's greatest ideas. Universities. The word university comes from the Latin Universitas Magistrorum et Scholarium, which means, essentially, a community of teachers and scholars. It's a wonderfully simple and apt description, which sums up the spirit of universities right from the earliest days. They're not schools where pupils simply go to take instruction. They are communities where learning is exchanged. Teachers impart their knowledge not only to students, but also to each other. And there is the sense that they are places where ideas are shared and cherished. Of course, universities don't always live up to this ideal. And as universities have multiplied in recent years, standards and approaches have inevitably varied, with some quite clearly being education factories, or worse, while others foster an outdated elitism. Nonetheless, the word university has a powerful aura that still inspires both administrators and students to regard them with just a little more reverence, just a little more sense of something rather special than they would a college. The first three universities, Bologna, Paris, and Oxford, all date back to the 11th century, when the monastic tradition in Europe was at its height. And you can see the monastic links in the cloisters of many of the older universities. It's partly this that gives them their special quality. But the aura runs deeper than that. Universities had an urgent mission of learning. They were set up by the church, the medieval historian Sir Richard Southern asserted, to save humanity with their learning. The perfect knowledge of the world that might have been mankind's was lost by the fall. It was the scholar's task to recover some of what was lost and bring redemption to mankind before the imminent end of the world. So, it was not surprising that these early universities had a deep commitment to learning. And if the original purpose has been lost, some of the passion for knowledge lingers on in universities today. Although they were endowed by the church, the learning the medieval universities undertook was essentially secular. The tone was set by the influential and scholarly canon of the Abbey of Saint-Victoire in Paris in the early 12th century, Hugh of Saint-Victoire. Although firmly in the monastic tradition, Hugh argued that secular learning and the study of the natural world were a necessary foundation for proper religious contemplation. In other words, you needed to know about God's world before you contemplated the heavens. Learn everything, Hugh insisted. Later you will see that nothing is superfluous. Students at the medieval universities did not study theological matters as in the monasteries, but the liberal arts. That is, the general knowledge meant to train a student's capacity for rational thought, rather than professional or vocational training. The idea of liberal arts dates back to Roman times, when it was the education right for a free man, hence liberal arts. In the medieval universities, there were seven liberal arts to be studied, divided into the trivium, grammar, rhetoric and dialectic, and the quadrivium, arithmetic, music, geometry and astronomy. According to Hugh, learning these would help to restore God's image in us. It was this higher purpose that inspired university scholars to write summae, which were intended as encyclopedias of the whole of reality. The medieval universities taught entirely in Latin, and students were expected to chat in Latin, even outside classes, on pain of a fine. This served to emphasize the town-gown divide, and students attending university were often given phrase books to help them converse with the locals. But it made the universities entirely international. It was easy for an English student to go to Bologna or a German student to go to Salamanca in Spain, and no, they would have no language problems. So students did indeed study right across Europe. Europe was united intellectually as never since. Yet, while it helped the exchange of learning, it created a sense of elevation and remoteness from the ordinary people that has clung on to the universities ever since in the image of ivory towers of learning. There's another fascinating strand in the origins of universities that's often forgotten. Visitors from the Middle East cannot fail to be struck by the similarity between the quadrangles of the old European universities and the ancient Islamic schools set up in places like Baghdad, Cairo, and Fez in Morocco in the 9th and 10th centuries. The Islamic school of Al-Qarawin in Fez, established in 859 AD, might indeed be called the world's first university. It seems likely that before the divisive wars of the Crusades, the cultural interchange between Islam and the West was significant. Certainly, Arab learning, translated into Latin, with the authors given suitable Latin names such as Avicenna, Geber, Averroes, and Al-Hasan, played a key role in the early universities, along with the classical texts reintroduced to the West from Islam. Moreover, the whole teaching setup of the early European universities seems to owe a lot to the early Muslim schools with their study groups or halakas, their special master-student relationships and so on. Even today, university professors occupy academic chairs, a thousand-year-old hangover from the Muslim schools where only the professor sat on a chair or kursi and all his students squatted around him on the floor. As the divide between East and West deepened, these connections were forgotten, and in time too the Christian religious overtones faded, and the universities became entirely secular institutions. Many traditions lingered on, though, and so too did the heightened sense of purpose, and maybe also the idea that students leave home and throw their lives entirely into being at university owes a great deal to the monastic retreat to focus on higher things. Although religion is now taught only on specialist minority courses and the teaching is rational, not revelatory, it's this quality of retreat that makes universities special. They are otherworldly and meant to be, indeed need to be, to free teachers and students from everyday distractions to learn about life and the world in a very different way, which could be anything from long drunken nights chatting about the meaning of life to solitary hours poring over dense books in the university library. The contribution of universities to our intellectual and cultural life over the centuries has been immense. Nearly all the greatest minds in science and philosophy, for instance, found their first inspiration and made their first bold exploration in their field at university. Scientists like Newton, Darwin, Maxwell and Dirac, philosophers such as Erasmus and Wittgenstein, and poets such as Wordsworth and Coleridge, all began their careers at Cambridge University, for instance. The universities continue to play a pivotal role in our society. For all the vacuous discussions and social flutter, many of them are major hubs of research and academic advancement. They may not always provide the hands-on, practical work that specialist research institutes gives, but they provide the new ideas and the theoretical underpinnings without which the specialist institutes could never start. While much of the research on genetics, for instance, is in the labs of biotech companies and government research establishments, the breakthrough discovery of the structure of DNA by Watson and Crick in 1953 that made it all possible took place at universities in Cambridge and in London. For the students who study at them, the best of universities provide a unique chance for learning, not just about the details of their subject, but how to think for themselves. They are oases too, where students can explore their ideas, investigate their hopes and dreams, and learn about themselves in a way that they can at no other kind of educational establishment. They meet intelligent people and can exchange ideas both profound and trivial. They can share pivotal moments in their lives and pointless drunken nights. And they can make friends and love. Most, though by no means all, who have been to university agree that it was the defining moment in their lives.